It's crunch time, my friends. We're staying up late to watch an untangle political debate. Leaves changing colors, campaigns in a stew, hoping some voters change their colors, too. Hi, everybody. This is where the arts and culture of West Wisconsin congregates and converses. Welcome to Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. This week, are you kidding? I realize it's a bit selfish to schedule a guest who to me is the shaman on the mountaintop, but I wager there may be enough of you out there for whom the name Cousin Brucey brings back memories. If you spent time in your room on any given night back in the 60s and early 70s, before Atari and the Walkman, and all you had was your radio, the air was full of sounds from far away. One of the strongest signals was WABC in New York City, and Cousin Brucey was a disc jockey of the highest energy. He played the best songs and had the most fun. Well, he's returned to where it all began for him, and we'll be talking with Cousin Brucey later on in the program. Wow. We'll also have an update on some cool events coming to the Chippewa Valley Museum. Director Carrie Ronander is here. Catherine Thomas welcomes Dawn Passino, a glass artist and apple grower, co-owner of the Glass Orchard. And right here is where this week all begins. Once again, I paid a visit to Pablo Center in Eau Claire, and once again, except for the occasional staff member in the halls, it's quiet. But we'll look on the bright side by shining our spotlight on things that are happening, and that surely describes the visual arts facet of this downtown gem. Rose Dolan Neal manages Pablo's visual and literary arts endeavors. We found a place in the cavernous atrium to chat. I knew, Rose, that autumn was known for apples and pumpkins and football, but I did not know that it is dubbed a busy season for visual art programming. So I learned something new already, even before we start talking. You have been curating visual art for a while now. Is fall a typical visual arts season?
It is. Fall is always very busy. We go according to a calendar, a school calendar year in the arts. Many arts centers have seasons that start in the fall and kick off, end in the late spring, just like a school year's calendar. So fall is always hopping with events and gallery receptions and talk sessions. And, of course, because we have so many theaters here, busy with theater things as well.
Fall art tours, visiting the studios.
We have a lot of fall art tours and workshops. And fall is a time for nesting, right? So fall is a time when a lot of people want to start buying new art for their homes. Sure. They want to maybe create new art or start a new craft or learn a new medium because winter's coming and it's time to... Oh,
thanks for that reminder.
Well, it's always on the way. You never know. You never know when winter's going to come, especially in the fall, right? So there's this urgency for getting out there and setting down some beautiful canvases or learning something new to get you through the season.
You're a busy person in the fall. Good for
and
you.
Fall's also a good time for artists to start creating more works for the busy holiday season coming up, too. A lot of artists will have a lot of artwork that they're working on in the fall.
We still have that challenge to go pandemically, don't we?
Yes, we do.
COVID Christmas, it'll
here
be called.
It comes.
There's got to be a song coming out.
Yeah, it feels like it's lasted for 5 or 6 years already.
It does.
So it's hard to remember that we haven't had a COVID Christmas yet. Here it comes.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's talk about some nuts and bolts, and then we must touch on what has now become a permanent part of the Pablo personality. Last weekend, you guys were active, particularly busy week with a bunch of Go Paint events going on. Now, when this show airs, you still will have at least one left, which is Altoona.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, so we'll be in Altoona in their beautiful River Prairie Park from 4 to 8 p.m. That's a really beautiful park to paint in.
Forecast is for a little chilly, so dress appropriately, folks.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And then tomorrow, Friday, there is a submission deadline.
Yeah, so all of our artists who are registered will have the opportunity to submit their paintings that they've been creating all week long. It's not going to be a physical gallery exhibition, unfortunately. So our fix for that is to have a virtual exhibit. So all of the artists will be sending me images of their beautiful works of art. People will be able to view over, I'm guessing, over 60 paintings just from the week's worth of painting.
We're sitting in the beautiful but quiet lobby of Pablo Center in downtown Eau Claire. Rose Dolan Neal with me. She's visual and literary arts manager. The Confluence of Art annual exhibit.
Yes, sir.
Tell me.
Oh, it's good. It's so good.
Again, and Monday, some winners were announced.
Yes, our esteemed juror, David Brock, former gallery director at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center.
Okay.
Now he has moved to Wyoming area. He spent hours and days with the artwork that was submitted for the Confluence of Art Annual. There were over 200 paintings submitted via digital image that he had to look through, and of those over 200 works of art, he selected 53 beautiful works from our area's top creatives. All of those images are on our virtual exhibit on our website. From those 53 images, he also was asked to parse down to 4 winners, our best of show, first, second, and third place.
And winners. You'll find those online.
Yes, they are on our website.
And 3 events or exhibits are about to happen. We all know Patricia Mayhew Ham. She's from Shatek area.
Yes, she is, yep.
Her exhibit is virtual and opening
October 2nd,
which is Friday.
So Friday.
Tomorrow, actually.
I can't keep track of the days anymore.
No.
I mean, none of us can, right? With
so
this,
it's okay.
This
it's
new
okay.
Normal.
Don't worry about it. That's going to be, and her stuff's going to be up through January 3rd.
Yes.
Music Moves Me. That is kind of neat, and that's coming at the end of October. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's a long-time collaboration with the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Way back in the ECRAC days, back in the early 90s, the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra collaborated first with the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center and now with Pablo Center to present music to elementary and middle school-age children. From the music, the children are asked to create works of art that are based on what they feel, what they can visualize from listening to this one piece of music that the symphony plays.
That's October 30th through November 27th. Also, beginning October 30th, is First Nations Contemporary Art.
Yes, this is an exhibit that we are partnering with the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire's American Indian Planning Committee. Generally, at this time of year, in November, they would have a string of events featuring Native American experiences. Unfortunately, this season, they're not going to be able to do the events that they would normally.
Mm-hmm.
But November is American Indian Heritage Month. So in honor of that, Pablo Center will be featuring an exhibit of contemporary artwork by Native Americans. They're all available on our website, pablocenter.org. And the wonderful thing about that is you can view this artwork at any time.
Yes.
In your jammies.
And you can spend as much time as you want without feeling like you have to move on to the next one because someone is sort of bumping into you.
Absolutely. And you can have as much wine or beer as you want yes. while you're viewing the artwork. But yeah, it brings a level of convenience. You can view it anywhere in the world, so that's expanding our reach.
You bet.
And it's something that's not going to go away. When we're able to open our doors again, these virtual exhibits will be available to the general public because it's just a way for us to be even more accessible than we already can be.
You have a news release that goes way, way, way into 2021. You're planning on doing any of those come hell, high water, or COVID?
All of the gallery exhibits, They will all happen virtually until we can have them in person, and then they'll be both virtually and in person. Oh. Gosh, it would be so helpful for me to plan ahead and know, you know, in March we'll be able to have our doors open. But I'm not afforded that luxury, and none of us are. So we just keep on planning for the worst and hoping for the best.
Let's move on to that beautiful piece of vertical stained glass that spent the better part of last year coming to life. And that life was made possible through some notable generosity. A brief story of the first treasure.
Oh, what a beautiful work of art that is. We have been very fortunate in our patronage here at Pablo Center. So many people spent so much of their emotions and their time and effort getting this place built. We wouldn't be here without their generosity. And part of Pablo Group's generosity was naming rights for, well,
go figure,
many things here at Pablo Center. One of those spaces that they decided that they wanted to name was the James Hansen Gallery. James Hansen being a wonderful patron of the arts in this region. So James Hansen, a fine supporter of the arts and a patron of Michael Pila himself, stained glass artist, thought it was perfect to marry those two things together and really wanted to have a stained glass window commissioned here for Pablo Center. We were absolutely honored by that gift. And we worked to come up with a concept that really was reflective of our community. We collaborated on this masterpiece. Mm. It's a map of this beautiful area. It speaks so much of the confluence, our beautiful rivers. It has some tech zones that are incorporated into the piece and some beautiful streams coming into the rivers to connect us all together. And also, as you pointed out earlier, bridges over the river.
People can they see it online now? Soon?
Soon.
Okay.
Coming soon, yes.
Oh, that's good.
But if they are curious, they might be able to view it from outside of the building if they go along the bike trail.
Okay. And we'll have something eventually formal to introduce it. And where is it physically?
Physically, it's in our beautiful riverfront room. Hmm. It's a really beautiful community room on our first floor, very close to the James Hansen Gallery.
Well, I appreciate your time. The life is not easy in anyone's realm.
We are keeping ourselves busy, and of course nothing is going to replace being able to come close and see that beautiful work of art. That can't be replaced, and I'm looking forward to when people can experience that again.
I have to congratulate you on your flexibility. Way to go.
Thank you. It's the only thing we can be.
Thanks for being with us, Rose.
Thank you, Al.
Radio disc jockey legend Cousin Brucey says hi to Wisconsin, and a museum loves life on the farm. Up and coming on Spectrum West. Well, you know, it's apple season, and we have a lot of retail orchards to choose from around western Wisconsin. This week, Catherine Thomas picks one that has the fruit and the fine art.
So, Don, the glass orchard is pretty unique among the many apple orchards in our area, and that's because you have such a unique background. You are both an artist and an apple orchard owner and operator.
So I'm a native of Wisconsin. I grew up in the country in Amherst Junction, had a lot of land to play in and create in, and all of my free time was pretty much spent outside exploring like what nature had to offer. And I went to school and received a BFA in sculpture with an emphasis in glass, studied abroad at a glass school in Germany, completed an assistantship at a museum in Norfolk, and also spent a year in Japan. So after graduation, I traveled to lots of other glass schools and took classes and assisted artists just to further my knowledge of glass and other mediums. Prior to moving to Eau Claire, I run an education program at a glass museum in eastern Wisconsin, where I did all of the programming for the glass studio. And we offered, you know, glass classes and activities for children and adults, and a lot of outreach programs. I also taught art in a high school. So as you can see, I have a passion for sharing glass art with others.
I was wondering if there's a specific title for someone who works with glass.
Glass artist. If you are the one that is, you know, head in the glass studio, you are the gaffer. So that is the person that's sitting at the bench and creating the work. In the glass studio, there's a lot of teamwork. Usually when you see a glass blowing studio, there's not just one person working, there are several. We have a great team of people here that work in our studios and help us out with creating and fabricating our pieces.
And you ended up owning an apple orchard, which is related. Well, tell the story. How did you end up owning an apple orchard as a glass artist?
Yes, kind of a funny story. At the time, as I said, I was running the education program at a glass museum, and my partner John and I were looking for the next step, looking for a place to open up our own glass business. We were looking to relocate, so we started looking all around at different property. We were looking at the East Coast, where he is from, you know, Chicago, and a handful of other places. And we gave that a lot of thought because I really didn't want to leave my home state of Wisconsin, and he became to really love the lifestyle here. So after lots of searching, we ended up coming across a property on Craigslist, of all places, and we've been here for 3 years now.
Yeah, that is a great story. I never would have guessed. Your pairing of arts and agriculture, is it something that's a general movement that's going on now, or did you come up with that?
It kind of landed in our lap. You know, we were looking at the property for the outbuildings to, you know, build our glass studio, hold our glass fabrication shop, and have a store on the property, you know, lots of open space, and the already established orchard. After learning, you know, more about the city of Eau Claire, we decided to, you know, make this our home. We were, you know, kind of naive a bit about what it took to care for an orchard, but we really enjoy the made by hand, grown by hand motto. It was sort of a natural thing just to combine the two, and we've really gotten a lot of good feedback on the pairing of the two. So, you know, I have not really heard of this before, but I would not be surprised to see it more often.
The glass orchard is right between Highway 93 and Lowe's Creek Road in Eau Claire, just on the outskirts of the city. What do you know about the history of your orchard?
We, as I said, didn't know a lot before we moved here about owning an orchard, but we, you know, went to a lot of seminars and did a lot of research. And we've been really fortunate to have the Wisconsin Apple Growers Association that holds an annual conference to, you know, come together and share ideas, and it's a really nice support group. And we also have, you know, lots of fantastic mentors, like, just right here in our area. Very inspiring to us. In the five-mile radius around here, there are, you know, 5 to 6 orchards, and the same in Chippewa Falls. I'm just happy to be a part of the community. We're inspired by them just as we are inspired by other artists and how they create. Actually, the trees that are on the property are over 30 years old, actually, now that we've been here. And we did just plant a small block of high-density trees because growing apples has sort of become a passion of ours. Each year, we add a little something new. You know, we have our glass-blowing studio. You know, on a normal year, we would be teaching glass-blowing classes and doing demonstrations. We have our store on the property as well, so that's where we sell our prepackaged apples and fresh apple cider, hand-blown glass, and local art. We also do glass fusing classes here. So 3 years and many more.
Dawn Passano is my guest today. She's a co-owner and operator of the Glass Orchard, Apple Orchard, and Glass Blowing Studio in Eau Claire. So you, as a business owner, I'm sure have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm-hmm. It was a difficult thing for us, as it was for all businesses. We did close down our shop and our glass fusing classes over the spring and summer, but we were able to find a safe way to open up this fall. A lot of our activities are outdoor-based, like U-Pick, walking around the orchard. We added a activity when we opened on our porch, so people can still learn about glass art, about glass fusing, so we call it Projects on the Porch. Purely outdoors, you know, all the tables all separated, people can come in and create a project that we then fuse in our glass kilns, and then they are picked up the following weekend. But our demonstrations and classes have not been held this year due to COVID.
But you do have an event coming up, the Glass Pumpkin Patch Sale, which you do annually. It's this weekend and next weekend.
So this weekend and next weekend, we'll be holding our fourth annual Glass Pumpkin Patch Sale, where we will have over 600 glass pumpkins, you know, scattered throughout the orchard. And, you know, you think of pumpkin patches when you go to the orchard, but ours are all made out of glass. So we are offering it 2 weekends this year to spread it out a little bit. If people aren't looking for it to be too busy when they go out, they can come on the second weekend, which is the 10th and the 11th. And then we will be having U-Pick and prepackaged apples and cider and all of that good stuff, good orchard things as well that people can enjoy.
And you do make wine now. Will that be available
yeah,
too?
It definitely will.
For those who aren't familiar with what glass blowing is, can you tell us about that and how it's done?
Definitely. We have a furnace that holds molten glass. Our furnace holds about 300 pounds of molten glass, and it sits at 2,000 degrees at all times. We also have a reheating unit where we can reheat the piece if we want to mold it further. And we have kilns that we put the finished glass pieces in after they are completed to cool down to room temperature so they don't break. So you can kind of imagine this glass that comes out of the furnace, 2,000 degrees, is almost going to have the consistency of honey. So it likes to drip, it likes to move, which is kind of the allure of it sometimes. And we get to shape this into what we want our art to be. So we can inflate it with our breath, we can shape it with metal tools and wooden blocks. It's just a really fun material to work with, and that's why we really like sharing it with the public.
I think there are some pictures on your Facebook page of the blowing glass that people can check out if they're interested in how that looks. Since we can't see it in person yet, hopefully next year.
We will be doing just a bit of glass demonstrations on the Saturday where people can kind of filter through what, you know, our big demonstrations that we would do for free every Saturday and Sunday last year will unfortunately not happen. But if people are interested in seeing it in person, we will be doing some demonstrations on Saturday, the 3rd of October.
We've been talking about the Glass Orchard, Apple Orchard, and Glass Blowing Studio in Eau Claire. You can make your way over there this weekend or next weekend for their Glass Pumpkin Patch event, 10 to 6 on both those Saturdays and Sundays. More information on the Glass Orchard Facebook page. Dawn, thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. Later on Spectrum West, probably the best-known disc jockey in America back in the 60s and beyond, Cousin Brucey played the hits from New York City. We could hear it all across America without satellites and internet streams. Well, he's here, and he's back in his original groove. For now, museums are where our pasts reside, but they're also the foundations on which futures are built. If we're smart, they give us ideas. In the Chippewa Valley Museum, Eau Claire has a marvelous example of what a museum should and can be. Carrie Ronander is its director, and our first phone connection had kind of a weird bounce-back echoey thing going on. So Carrie sat in her car in the museum parking lot to assure much better reception. That's the flexibility and willingness to engage we all notice and appreciate. Before diving into the special programs, I think it would be prudent for us to bring everyone up to speed on the museum itself, just in case, and I have a feeling there are people out there who don't know about the Chippewa Valley Museum. So, it's in Carson Park. Been there a while. How long has it been there?
The museum opened in 1974, so close to 50 years.
You feature permanent exhibits, temporary exhibits, traveling exhibits. What's prominent right now?
Well, right now, we do have a traveling exhibit called Jacob Riis, How the Other Half Lives, about a photojournalist who kind of highlighted the really abysmal living conditions in New York City at the turn of the 20th century. That exhibit opened very beginning of September and is here until October 20th.
Is that all black and white photographs?
They are. Jacob Riis, he was one of the very first individuals to use flash photography and the first to use photographs in newspapers. Before him, they were using illustrations. So, you know, the impact of a photo is just so much more vivid. So his work really just kind of illuminated in more ways than one just what was happening. So many people didn't know how people were living. And so his work is really transformational at the time and reverberated, you know, for decades.
Maybe it was because of his photographs that they coined the phrase, photographs don't lie.
It could be. They're larger than life. I mean, the photographs he took would have been very, very small, like 5x7 when they were printed. But in the exhibit, they have some that are, you know, 6 feet by 9 feet, shows the impact. It's really kind of unbelievable, actually.
Back to the museum, Carson Park is one of the nicest locations, I think, for a park in any city I've lived in. It kind of feels like you're in the boonies, but you're smack dab in the city limits. Does it feel like that way to you?
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to have a museum and to work. Every season has its charm, even the winter when you get the fresh snowfall come to work and it's just absolutely silent. But yeah, the museum, we opened after being closed for a number of weeks this spring. We opened in June. And so we've been able to share the exhibits and what we have to the larger world now for a few months.
You have three upcoming nights in October, two Fridays and a Saturday. You're having what's called the Farm Life Harvest Series. They're called mini fundraisers, although you might want to call the amounts raised something like midi or maxi rather than than mini. The first two words of the event titles, Farm Life, that's actually a name of an exhibit.
It is our kind of our core exhibit, one of our visitor favorites, Farm Life. Farm Life has been at the museum for a while now, but it still resonates with lots of folks who come to visit, and it's such an important topic for our region and Wisconsin in general that we wanted to highlight it and remind folks it's here, but also use it to really help engage other individuals with what's kind of happening in agriculture today. So the fundraiser has different speakers involved in farming in some aspect or another over the course of the three different nights.
Cool. Before I go on to that, I just wanted to make the comment that I think every family with kids should take their kids, if they have the availability, and spend some time on a farm. Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, our roots, both here in the Chippewa Valley and the U.S. in general, it's very much tied to farming.
Other than the fact that farms are kind of disappearing, get it while it's hot, I say.
Yeah, somebody made the comment to me, a child from an urban area, I don't remember which one. The child made a comment of thinking that chocolate milk came from, you know, chocolate black cows.
Oh, boy.
You know, if you aren't exposed to farming, if you've ever been on a farm, if you've never seen a real cow, it's not that out of an idea to come up with on your own.
Sure.
Kind of, we laugh now, but people are really removed from farming in so many different places. Having that exhibit here, I think, is important.
You bet. That's Carrie Ronander. She's director of the Chippewa Valley Museum in Eau Claire. We brought up the title, the Farm Life Harvest Series, the three evenings. Let's thumbnail a description of each evening. What's October 9th all about?
Sustainability, how to be good stewards of the land and the water. So we have a CSA, Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Just Local Food Cooperative, so also talking about cooperatives.
Then Friday, October 16th, you delve into what's often standard with families engaged in agronomy, and that is tradition. The family tree sports many branches who engaged in farming in the past.
Yeah, so we have an individual who runs a century farm in his family for multiple generations, Connell's Family Orchard, which has been run by the family for six generations. We have an individual talking about Hmong market gardening and those traditions that have come from Laos and now practice in the U.S. and how they've transformed, and then wild ricing, so traditions from many different places.
The following day, Saturday the 17th, we looked down the road at who will keep the traditions going, and I said that they were three evenings. Actually, this begins in the afternoon.
Right, and it begins in the afternoon because we have younger people helping that night. So that one begins at 4, and it's next generation. We are working with Bloomer FFA and 4-H clubs to look at the youth who are involved in agriculture and going forward from there. And then Wisconsin Farmers Union Camp Kenwood, a camp for kids and families. It looks at, again, traditions and next generation and cooperatives.
Now, people wanting to attend, they have several options. They can attend one, two, or all three in person, or they can take it in online as well, yes?
That's right. There's discounts for more than one evening. And then we have the virtual option. So we provide all the content on an exclusive link for our virtual guests. In the age of COVID, we wanted to make sure that people could be involved in a way that they felt safe and comfortable, so gave plenty of options. And then the in-person one, there's limited attendance so that we have plenty of room for social distancing.
So what are the ways that people can register, and is there a deadline?
There is not a deadline.
Okay.
No. They register online. They can go to our website, cbmuseum.com, and we also have a Facebook event, and from there they get a link to register. Or they can call the museum, 715-834-7871, and register with Rachel Meyer.
That sounds like a wonderful event or series of events, and I hope you raise tons of money. Tell us what the proceeds are going to. It's not just going to the museum, is it?
No. $5 from every ticket is actually going to Wisconsin Farmers Union for their beginning farmers programs. And so we've worked very closely with the Wisconsin Farmers Union so that some of the money can be put back into the farmers and what they're doing. And the Wisconsin Farmers Union itself has provided a number of our speakers, and they've really helped shape this whole program. It's been a wonderful partnership.
Way to go. And good luck. I hope you raise some wagons full of money.
I hope we do, too, for everybody involved.
Back to the general museum topic. How can people, individuals, and families be a part of the museum family? Do you have memberships available, or how can people become regulars or participants in their museum?
We do have memberships. There are memberships for individuals and households. You can get a membership by going online to our website. You can also stop in and become a member here. Members really help support programs like bringing in a traveling exhibit, the Jacob Bruce exhibit here. And members are essential to the museum so that we can continue to provide a variety of programs and exhibits for the community.
It's a wonderful place, and you guys keep up the great work. Carrie Ronander, thanks.
Thanks, Al. It's been great talking with you.
Once again, contact information, cvmuseum.com. Phone number, 715-834-7871. This is Spectrum West on WPR. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank, dedicated to investing in partnerships and offering Charter Bank business services with small business loans, treasury management services, and a variety of checking accounts. Details are at charterbank.bank. Well, WABC in New York was what they called a clear channel AM station, meaning no other station had that number on the dial, and if it broadcast with enough power, like the maximum 50,000 watts, why, back when radio stations weren't packed so tightly on that dial, young people were listening to WABC clear across the country and beyond, if atmospheric conditions were just right, yeah. As a teen, I listened in Wisconsin, and one of the premier WABC DJs of the time and the nighttime was Bruce Morrow, air name Cousin Brucey, wild, wacky, loud, and popular.
This music, pop music, is the greatest force in our nation, I think, in the world today. This is what the people want to hear. A lot of people are against it, but I think this is the most dynamic form of entertainment that has ever, ever happened. Yeah.
everybody. Take my hand. It's Graham. We're up to the top 10 right now. Hope everybody's having a wonderful time on the Brucey Show. Yes. Hi, everybody, all over America. This is your cousin Brucey. It's the WABC party. Go, go. Woo!
Don't you wanna tap your feet now, baby?
Everybody sing.
Come on, let's go.
God, you're doing fine. I hear you.
What are you? Show. Come on and go, go, go.
With cousin Brucey. WABC Chime Time, my dear cousin. It's 13 minutes. It knocks me off the chair every time. 13 minutes after 11 on the Cousin Show, 43 WABC.
The greatest team in the world. The greatest team in the world. The greatest team in the world.
You!
And 77 WABC. All Americans.
Number 9 to number 6 this week, Vito and the Salutations. Unchained Melody's ringing and singing for you in the Brucey Show.
Oh, my love, my darling, I hunger for you.
So that's what he sounded like in 1963 on WABC. Let's check in with Cousin Brucey 57 years later, back on WABC in New York. Bruce Morrow, welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's Al. My cousin Al is calling me from Wisconsin. Hello, Wisconsin.
Hey, man. How you doing?
It is a pleasure to be here. Well, I have a lot of Wisconsin cousins. I always get a kick out of when somebody calls me Wisconsin because it sounds like so far away from my studio in New York City. But, you know, it's really not, is it?
No.
There's nothing far away anymore.
This is a thrill for me. How often do you hear people my age tell you that it was your voice and your music all the way from New York that kept us company on many nights when we had more questions than answers?
I hear that a lot, and I love it. You know, it's funny. I never get tired of hearing somebody say that to me. Hey, you brought me up in Wisconsin or North Dakota or somewhere outside of Los Angeles. I get such a good feeling to know that I'm involved with people's lives. And, you know, I'll tell you, Al, this is exactly what you and I want to do. At radio today, we are so involved. It's not like when I first started, when I was at WABC, I always used to tell time and weather and play a record or two and commercials. But today, we are so involved. The audience has become so sophisticated, Al, as you know. They are demanding certain things from their devices. And what they're demanding is something called content. And so I always tell people, you know, it doesn't matter what they're listening on. People will gravitate towards content. They are looking for something that they want to hear. And you and I are doing something very unique. We're on probably the most intimate of all mass media. You and I are in bed with people. We take showers with people. We're in baths with people. We're in cars. We're in supermarkets. We're in department stores. We walk with people. So no matter where you are, you can have us with you. And we share the most intimate moments. I love that. I just feel it, you know, when I'm on the air.
I've always been proud of radio as a career. It's notorious, you know, unless you're in a major market, which I was in a couple instances, but the pay isn't that good. The hours suck. But those are the dues you pay early on, but it does pay off because of the things you just talked about.
Well, my first job was in Bermuda. I lived in a boarding house in a bed that I couldn't even sit up in because the eave of the roof came down on me, and I paid like $30 a month. I was making maybe $60 a week in those days, mm-hmm. And you worked 90 hours.
Yeah,
you know, you never slept. So I know exactly what you're saying. It's a wonderful life, but not easy.
But anyway, I'm going to bore you with my story quickly, and then we'll move on and we'll go back to what you were just talking about, your past. Here's my story. We got a reel-to-reel tape recorder as a family Christmas gift 1 year when I was just a young guy. And it was a novelty, but it wore off for everybody in the family but me. It was all mine. I rigged up a system of recording directly off the speaker terminals on our big hi-fi in the dining room. And I would sit at night recording radio stations, those wonderful clear channel 50,000-watt rock and roll AM stations from cool American cities. And 77 WABC was one of my regulars. Yeah, radio geek, I admit it. Always loved listening to music on the radio. But then life got serious, and it was off to college for a while. That didn't work out. And guess where I ended up? Being trained for radio, and then my 51-year career began. So, Bruce, you kind of shaped me in some weird way.
Well, that makes me very proud, and I love it, and I appreciate it because you and I can tell stories. I have so many things that I went through before, quote, I made it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hate to say that, before I made it. But, you know, we all have to pay our dues a little bit. And you know something? You would not make it unless you have this background. Sweat and toil, not knowing if you should eat too much for lunch because you wouldn't afford dinner, you know? But I think that's what makes the person, Al. I'm a lucky guy, and I know that. I love what I do. To this day, when that light goes on, Al, I still get a little chill in my belly.
Good for you.
I appreciate it. Oh, I love what I do.
Good. Good. Yeah, we have to think back on those days fondly, and I thank you for reminding me about that. You started smaller, as you just alluded, and then the ladder led back to your hometown of New York City, 1961. We all hear about things happening because someone was in the right place at the right time. Obviously, New York was right for you, but you absolutely had the benefit of becoming popular during a decade credited with changing everything, especially music. In that way, you were fortunate.
Yeah, very fortunate. And I really believe in that. You have to be, you know, it's not a matter of luck or anything. I don't know about luck. But if you are in the right place and you know how and understand how to take advantage of that opportunity, you're going to have it made. Sure, in the 60s, everything was changing. Radio was changing. The recording industry was changing. Technology was now starting to get a little more sophisticated. The audience was clamoring for things. Distribution on records, that's a very important part of the story. Distribution was increasing, so people were able to get the records that they heard on their radio station. So both the recording industry and the radio industry benefited from each other. So this was the time of transition. This was the time of change. And if you were there, which I was lucky enough to be there, 10 years earlier, 10 years later, maybe you and I would not be talking right now.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Being there, look, I'm a kid. I grew up in Brooklyn. I grew up in the streets of Brooklyn, right? Played stickball, and we played the stoop ball and hit the penny. And we grew up understanding what it means to take a look at an opportunity and play the game.
Mm-hmm.
I really hold a lot of my success to my growing up. And my parents were great. My parents never really pushed me to become a doctor because every Brooklyn mom wants their kid to be a doctor.
Mm.
Right? And I just fell in love with radio. Yeah, I want to hear a great story. I'll tell you how I fell in love with radio.
But you might as well tell me. I'm going to ask you.
Anyway. I had a feeling you would.
Yeah.
It's about 1945, I think it is. I'm coming home from PS 206, which is public school 206 in New York. And I stop at the park with my friends. Then I run home, East 26th Street, and I wanted my milk and cookies. It's about now 3:30 or thereabouts. I walk down the street. I notice my mother. I see her across the street with Mrs. Flink and Mrs. McGillicuddy and Mrs. O'Brien, and all these women are crying. They're looking at an opening in the window, and there's a little yellow box, and this little fader radio was saying something like this. I heard it, and it said, "Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, passed away today." And my mother and these very strong Brooklyn women, and they were strong, cried. They were bawling. I had to think about it, of course, growing older. But if that little box could evoke emotion like it did in my mother and her dear friends, then I wanted to find out what that was all about. And in our living room, we had this big Crosley, a big piece of furniture radio. So I used to sit behind it with a spoon and a fork. That was my microphone. And I'd play radio for years. I still like to do that.
So it's not surprising that you did found a radio station in college. You know, I have notes, but I'm going to bounce around because the piece that I played at the beginning before you and I started yakking shows the kind of show you had. You were boisterous. You had a lot of fun on the radio back on WABC.
A lot of energy.
And I don't know why, because I jotted this in pencil when I was preparing for this. Okay, back to the emotional side of radio. I'm interested, 1963, what was your show like the day that Kennedy was shot?
Oh, I was driving along Coney Island Avenue in Brooklyn with my wife. She came on the air, and we started listening. So I pulled over, and we both started crying. I mean, it was so emotional. A day you just never forget. That evening, I went in. The show was very quiet. Cousin Brucey, he became Bruce Morrow Citizen. And I represented all the people that were listening to me in those days. I was very emotional. I was quiet. My throat was closed. You know, when you get terribly emotional, you're crying and you're shocked and you're really you don't know what's going to happen next. I couldn't talk too much. I remember we canceled all commercials and I played, I remember, very quiet music, did very little speaking. We took news reports and I did what I had to do, just let people know that I'm there suffering and shocked with them. That was it. That was a very tough thing to do. Very tough. In fact, that's tougher to do than doing my regular show, which is like an explosion in a boiler.
Well, thanks for sharing that, because everybody listening depended on you to lead them through the process. And I'm sure a lot of people went, God, I wonder what he's going to sound like tonight. So
exactly. A very important thing that we must remember. People need somebody that they trust and that they're with all the time and is part of their families. And that's what we become. We become family members that they can trust. I remember that happened another time when the Twin Tower nightmare happened. I went on the air, and I really didn't want to go on the air. I was so shocked. But the station manager said, no, you have to. People need voices of sturdiness. They need somebody to lean on.
When that kind of thing happens, there's a lot of pressure. That's not your shtick.
No, because, you know, you're as emotional as the audience.
Yeah.
But you have to sort of rise above that. It takes a tremendous amount of energy and guts. In fact, talking about it right now, it's making me a little sad.
Well, we'll get off that in just a minute. Let me do this. You guys recognize the voice. It's Cousin Brucey, folks. Bruce Morrow, legendary DJ. He's been there, and he's back to WABC. He has a Saturday night rock and roll party show. You introduced and interviewed the Beatles and lots more of those biggies. You've appeared in movies. You've been a philanthropist. You've written a few books. As one might expect, you're in a few halls of fame. You've received lifetime achievement awards. You have an honorary doctorate or two. And here you are at the ripe young age of 84.
Can you imagine that? That's a mistake. First of all, I don't look 84. I don't act 84. I don't feel 84.
No.
So I believe there was a mistake at the hospital. That's what I think.
Sure,
Somebody screwed up.
So you are back where it really all began, and you had a good gig at Sirius XM, but I imagine there was no way that you would turn down the opportunity. And maybe you can tell us once and for all, Bruce, can we go home again or can't we?
Yes, we absolutely can go home. There's never a detour that says dead end. The detour never leads to a dead end. There's always an opportunity to open up.
Good.
Whether it be larger or smaller, it doesn't matter. Those are makes you happy. I was on the Sirius XM for 15 years.
Uh-huh.
I was happy. It was good. It was a good experience. But one day, Al, I woke up and I said, something is wrong. I'm not feeling as happy. This is after maybe 5 or 6 years on the air. I realized there was something missing, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I decided I was doing something called corporate radio. I was in corporate radio. It's a little cold. It's not warm. I'm a warm, fuzzy guy. I like local radio. I love local radio. And that can be done on a national basis. People love to hear what's happening in your town in New York or wherever the heck you are.
Yeah.
And if you present it properly and you make everybody welcome, it works. I started receiving phone calls from a guy named John Castanides on Saturday nights and request records. And one day somebody comes over to me. By the way, do you know who that man is that calls you a couple times a month? He just bought WABC. I said, what? And sure enough, this guy wrote a personal check and bought this station. Little did I know, about 6 months later, he and I would be seriously chatting about that I would go home. Lassie, go home.
Cool.
Brucey went home. I'll tell you, Al, I am happier on the air than I've been in my entire life. I'm all over the place with this and that and streaming and the Alexa, you know, you name it. Somebody can open a refrigerator, you'll hear my voice in it.
Yeah.
It's local, national. But yeah. I want that local feel. I want that warmth.
Saturday night rock and roll party. I can't let you go before I ask one more question, because sometimes when radio people gather, we talk about the dreams wherein we are on the radio and we have nothing to play or say. Do you have those dreams?
Yeah, absolutely. Anxiety dreams. You know what my anxiety is?
What?
Oh, aren't you interesting? I've never been asked that before.
Yeah,
I love that. I wake up in a cold sweat, and I realize I don't have any music to play.
Yep.
I can't find my records.
Bingo.
I'm going crazy. You know, I love to talk. I mean, I can talk for hours. Today, I'm doing variety rather than just a music and time and weather show. I talk a lot. But my anxiety is I can't find a record to play. Mm-hmm. And I sweat, and I wake up, and I'm really shaking.
And you get nothing to read. There's no scripts. Nothing. There's nothing.
I am naked.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad. Cousin Brucey has the same dreams that I've had all these years, and most radio people do. You know, I think the stock question would be how long, Bruce, but I don't care how long. I say, you know, keep going for it, and I think that's how you feel. Thank you so much for being with us on Wisconsin Public Radio and Spectrum West, and I sure hope that somewhere along the line we can talk again.
Let's do part two someday. I'll tell you Beatles stories.
And please be assured, people in Wisconsin, my age and every age, are going to be tuning in to 77. Do you have jingles?
Oh, yeah. I play all my jingles.
You do?
And I have reverb.
Oh, cool.
Oh, it's exactly the same.
Oh, good deal.
I've changed a little bit, but the energy's there. The jingles, the original jingles, Carl.
Oh, wow.
And the reverb. People wanted reverb.
Yes.
I wasn't going to do reverb. That's echo. It's there. The feeling is there. The emotion is there. And I have never been happier on the air.
That's so wonderful to hear. Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Carl. Very much.
If the radio disc jockey was used to promote the sale of records, the phonograph record became the staple diet on which most stations thrived.
Wisconsin Bruce.
The disc jockey became an institution and radio an automated talk and song marathon.
From now until midnight tonight, we're on our party, and I know you're listening all over America, all over Canada, and it's really great. Now, at 9:30 tonight, a special Beatles segment like we have every Saturday. The Beatles will share the spotlight with the Dave Clark Five. Here's, I think, one of the most typical ones by the Beatles. Guys and gals, dig!
Wow, Cousin Brucey. Hey, thanks to Dean, Kate, Patrick, Catherine, Jim, and you. Going to take a break next week, but we'll see y'all before you know it. And since the Brucey air check that we heard is from 1963, let's go out with one of the top songs of that year, 63, from a rather one-hit wonder, the Rooftop Singers. This is Walk Right In. Hey, take care, wear a mask, be good to each other. We'll see you down the road. Thanks for listening.
Walk right in, set right down. Daddy, let your